Welcome. You are listening to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we love to talk about teaching multilingual learners. I'm your host, Colette Ferron Goodwin, and I'm a resource specialist on the EML team with the Mid-State Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network at OCM BOCES in Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to another episode of Our Burning Questions. The Our Burning Question for today is, what opportunities are available for English language learners and multilingual learners to support their academic success and personal growth? And here to discuss this question is my very special guest, Anna Stukes, who joins us from our sister Our Burn in the Midwest region of New York. Anna, welcome.
Thank you.
So nice to have you. So, Anna, could you just maybe tell our listeners something a little bit about you, your role, your position, your special areas of interest, and what drew you to working with English language learners?
Sure. I'm one of the PD specialists here at Midwest Our Burn. I'm also the Midwest Regional Pri-Li Coordinator, and I've been with Midwest Our Burn for about 6 years now. And some special areas of interest that I have are dual language programming, metalinguistic awareness, CELA biliteracy, scaffolding for ELLS. And what drew me to working with ELLS is that my mother came to the U.S. for college from Peru, and it was natural that I would encompass language in some way in my future career. I didn't necessarily plan on being an educator, but I'm so glad that I did.
So talk a little bit about some challenges that English language learners or multilingual learners face with regard to academic success.
Sure. So more recently, I've been thinking about this, and what I see is a basic understanding that English language learners or multilingual learners are unique and they vary in their language ability. And it can sometimes be difficult for people to understand that if they don't have a lot of experience working with English language learners. So trying to help draw those connections in that way. Also, equity and access to students who are English language learners being enrolled in advanced programs also is an area that seems to be a challenge.
So I think you've kind of alluded to this already in talking about the challenges, but why is it important to create opportunities for English language learners and multilingual learners?
Sure. So part of it is so that our English language learners can see the importance of being valued and making that explicit connection for them and having opportunities available for them. And they could be extracurricular opportunities such as Pri-Li, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. I was also thinking about the assets that English language learners bring with different cultural perspectives and language knowledge, as you talked about metalinguistic knowledge, which is also an asset too.
Correct. Yeah. And correlating that also with the CELA biliteracy and the valuing of hanging, you know, keeping your home language, keeping your culture alive. It doesn't mean that needs to be, you know, left behind or, you know, anything like that, but to keep it alive, you know, it is part of who you are. Yep.
Yes, because it's part of their heritage and part of their identity, and to affirm that is essential, I think.
Correct. Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. So you mentioned Pri-Li. So Pri-Li is the Puerto Rican Hispanic Youth Leadership Institute. So could you share a little bit about what Pri-Li is and what your role entails?
Sure. So as the regional coordinator, I deal with recruitment. And so I like to share with schools, parents, families, students that it is a 30-hour training program. So it is a series of trainings that equate to 30 hours. And students learn about leadership skills, public speaking, they have networking opportunities, they learn parliamentary procedures, they learn about Hispanic heritage as well. And students are of Hispanic descent and can be English dominant or Spanish dominant. We do have the ability to run the program bilingually. So that is all are welcome in terms of their language abilities. And what's also a great perk is that at the end of the training program that we take a trip to Albany, each delegation, there are roughly eight delegations across the state. And so the Midwest delegation or Monroe delegation is comprised of roughly 10 students who go to Albany out of our group, and they meet with over 200 other students who have gone through the program throughout the state, and they participate in workshops that helps them understand and draw connections with the Hispanic heritage, and that's typically held at the University of Albany. And we also see the students excel in hosting a mock assembly in chambers. And so students, that's what they prepare for during those 30 hours, is for that big day of the mock assembly. And then there's a great celebration at the end honoring students and their accomplishments, and scholarship awards are provided at the end of that celebration as well.
Yeah. So, and I also want to add that they run this themselves, right?
Correct.
They're all assigned specialty roles. So all of the, yes, you know, all of the delegates are assigned specialty roles. So they're basically running this. So they all have roles in this whole process. And it's really interesting to see them flourish and demonstrate their confidence and knowledge and diplomacy throughout this process. And it's a pretty intense weekend.
It is. It's exciting. You're on the go from 7 a.m. until midnight at times, you know, because yeah, students are preparing for those roles and practicing possibly with students that they've never met before, right, that have prepared for their roles as well. There is some time for collaboration there, and there's friendships and relationships that live on for the rest of their lives through this program.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of time, a lot of team building going on at the weekend as well. Yeah. And then you had also mentioned that the celebration at the end, it's really nice. It's a nice formal dinner and dancing, and it's really great to see them celebrate their accomplishments.
Yes, and see, get a taste of what it's like to be in those positions.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Do you find that it provides opportunities for alumni after they graduate?
Definitely. So at least here at Midwest Arbor, and I'm sure it's the same for other delegations as well, is that oftentimes alumni come back and become trainers as well for the program. Actually, one of our trainers is Anthony Plunzinski Figueroa, and he completed the program back in the early 2000s. Okay. And so he's, you know, been with us for almost 20 years at this point.
Wow.
Yes. And so it just speaks to the legacy of the program and the dedication that alum have to it as well. Something during the pandemic that we were able to put together for the Monroe delegation with Natalia Martinez Bliss is that, who is also an alum of the program, she was able to coordinate an alumni hour for us via Zoom. And so we were able to have alumni from Ohio, Washington, D.C., from different parts, you know, they're in different parts of the countries now,
right,
but to share, you know, where they are. And we had anyone who had gone through the program in the last 2 years to the last 15 years, you know, some that, you know, were in the program with her and Anthony as well. So it's great to see the desire for alum to come back and share with our students at this point in time.
Yes. And it really shows the lasting impression that it leaves on being
Definitely.
involved in this program, this institute. And we have a similar situation where we have a Prilly trainer who was also an alumnus as well, Kenneth Freeland. And so
Excellent.
he's working here in the office with us to help our team as well with the trainings
Yeah.
in the Syracuse area. So
Awesome.
we've talked about a little bit about the fact that Prilly emphasizes the Hispanic culture. What are some of the transformations that you see for students who may be somewhat removed from their Hispanic culture?
That's an excellent question. We do have a number of students who are Hispanic. Let's just give an example through their mother. And in that, the student may or may not speak the language, may or may not have connections to the country of origin, may or may not have relationships with family members on that side of the family. And so, yes. By blood, they are Hispanic. In terms of understanding what that means for that student is 100% up to them, And so within Prilly, we provide opportunities for students to learn more about what it means to be Hispanic through video, through articles, through experiences that we provide in terms of connecting with community members who are Hispanic also. And then also when we go to Albany, that's just another experience, to continuously be exposed to the Hispanic culture and Hispanic people. And so many students have come away from the experience getting to know a little bit more about themselves, starting to build a little more of their identity within the Hispanic culture. And with that, some are interested in learning the language. Some are interested in going to a Spanish-speaking country, whether it's their native country of origin or a different one, And so aside from that, students take interest in issues that impact Hispanics. And, big picture in terms of Prilly, that is part of it, is being civically engaged with issues that are important to you. And so that's definitely been some of the transformations. Also, an aspect of shyness, right? So as adolescents and working through, being shy, that's okay too, that's certainly a personality. However, we see the leadership potential within students, and they are able to channel that, and you don't have to be the most outgoing person in order to be a leader. You just have to be effective. And so those are some of the skills that students learn.
Yes. I was also thinking about the fact that seeing other leaders who are Hispanic are great role models for them so that they see that yes, that there are members of this community that are in leadership positions, and that further kind of encourages them to pursue this
Yes,
as well, right?
definitely, definitely.
Great, great. Yes. And I was also thinking about the language piece, right? Thinking about my own heritage, my family is Italian. However, my mother was the youngest of five and spoke English. So when my grandmother was with us, and I had to go to school to learn Italian so that I could talk to her.
Yeah.
So, but I kind of connecting with that motivation to learn the language and to communicate. So.
Sure. And then seeing the value in that, right? Not only being able to connect with your family, but others within the community as well.
So thank you for sharing that information about Prilly. It's a great organization, and we'll be sure to share the link to the website so that our listeners are able to get some more information about that.
Excellent. Thank you.
So, and there's another organization that is very near and dear to your heart that I want to talk about as well, the Last Shall Be First organization. So could you tell us a little bit about that? How did it get started? What's your role? And then we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds great. So the Last Shall Be First scholarship started this past year officially. And Dan and Irma O'Connor, they provided scholarships for students over the last approximately 15 years. And not just to any students, these students are specifically living in Peru. And Dan and Irma are my parents. And so we were connected with an orphanage in Peru, and my parents were able to provide scholarships for some of the girls living in the orphanage to continue their education after high school. And the students would go to technical schools. And so those are typically 3-year programs. And so that's how the organization got started. So they saw the impact that this would have on the students' ability to break the cycle of poverty living in the orphanage. And then there are other students connected to the orphanage that would go to a specific school. And so at this school, it was in a community that served students who were living in extreme poverty. And so not only now are the orphan students able to benefit from the scholarships, but also the surrounding community who, when I speak about poverty, I'm talking about dirt floors. I'm talking about no electricity in the home. A one-room shack, essentially, is the typical scenario of this extreme poverty. And so it's had such an impact over the years, for these students, for these families, and for their community as well, that my parents were very driven to create a scholarship foundation so that we could have a larger impact and it not just be, two students a year, but possibly 20 students, 100 students, And so that's how we got started.
So you're basically saying that they did this on a private level for the past 15 years, you said, right? And now it's official, now it's an official foundation.
It's so now, people are able to sponsor a student if they'd like for the 3-year program, and 1 year is typically about $1,500. And when that comes to technical school in the US, that seems extremely affordable, right?
Right.
Or, there's other ways to donate as well. It could be monthly donations, that kind of thing. On the website, there's a donation page that gives different options that you can do.
So when you talk about technical programs, what specifically does that mean? Is it different than here in the United States?
So there's a technical school that they have various campuses, and this is just one example of a technical school, but it's the largest technical school that they have there. And so what happens is the students are trained. It could be to be a nurse tech, it could be to be a plumber, a technician, any type of trade, right? And what happens is that those are the most marketable jobs in Peru at this moment. So the students are guaranteed a job upon graduation from these programs. Whereas at this point in time, professions such as being a doctor or a lawyer are the jobs are not as readily available as these technical jobs are. So
Gotcha.
that's where the focus is at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, just trying to get like a frame of reference as
Sure.
to, what that looks like for students in Peru.
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you
Yeah.
find that is the most satisfying thing about being a part of this organization?
Well, at this point in time, because it is, the first official year, we developed a scholarship application for the students to complete. And my parents went down actually to the different schools because right now it's 4 different schools that are involved in
Okay.
this application process. And because some of the students don't have parents and some of the students do have parents, so they had some meetings and some parents came and they approached Dan and Irma and they said, "This feels like a dream. I didn't know that this could be real. I'm not sure what the state of scholarships is in Peru. However, it's typically loan-based, so it's having to repay the money that is provided. And so the concept of not having to repay the money, and that we are teaching them to fish, right, versus, you know, providing it for them, is something that is a gift, you know, that they see and they value. And another part of it too is the students' desire to want to not just take advantage of this opportunity for themselves, but also the concept of, I can't wait to provide for my mom. I can't wait to take care of my brother or my sister or my family, you know? So that aspect of it is right on target with, you know, our mission and our vision in terms of breaking the cycle of poverty and giving back, transforming lives.
That's very emotionally charged, right?
Yeah.
When you think about when, as you had described, that extreme poverty, and these students are motivated to better themselves and educate themselves so that they can support their families, it puts it on another completely other level, on a whole other level, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, I can give you an example. One of the students that my parents supported through his education to become a nurse while he was caring for his disabled brother and working, right, to, aside from the expenses of, you know, going to school to make those ends meet. And now he has a family and he has children and he's still able to care for his brother, you know, and there's that comfort in knowing that they're going to be okay, right? He's working, he's able to provide for them.
So I'm wondering about how interested students can find out more about this. And I know, so this is strictly limited to Peru, correct? Or are you providing scholarships here in the state as well? Or
so currently it's for students in Peru in these circumstances. We are on Instagram. We have the Last Shall Be First Peru is our name on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, which is the Last Shall Be First Scholarships. And then we have the website, the Last Shall Be First Scholarships with an S .org. And a way for students or school districts to become interested or involved is by visiting the website. We have a section on our website called Why Peru, and it explains, you know, the landscape, the culture, you know, all of the wonderful things that Peru naturally has to offer. So there's ways to learn more intimately about Peru through that. And also we are discussing in the works is possibly lessons that we can provide for students and for schools, for teachers to use within their classroom as well. They could possibly write letters to our students, words of encouragement and support, you know, through their circumstances or through their education, their educational endeavors. And I mean, lastly, if a school district or, you know, students or families were interested, they could provide a donation, you know, if that's something that they would be able to do, that would help a student for sure.
So how would an English speaking student write a letter?
That's a great question. So they could either write in English or they could write in Spanish as an exercise, right? Because students there do learn English. That is usually part of the education criteria for K through 12 is to have English classes. And for some of the programs in technical school, there is a language requirement as well. So usually students do learn English during those programs. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, you know, this is an amazing opportunity, and, you know, it's such a wonderful, you must be so proud of your family for doing this for so long and now making it this official organization, which is wonderful that you, thank you for sharing that and talking about it and sharing sharing it with us, with our listeners as well.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Ah, you're welcome. So thinking about the success of our English language learners and multilingual learners, both on an academic and a personal level, what do we need to keep in mind?
I put myself a little bit in the shoes of our English language learners and the at times personal balance of trying to maintain heritage and culture and language and also become part of the American culture and language as well. And when I think of that again, valuing who each student is, and our students valuing themselves as well, and seeing all of the positive qualities that they're able to contribute to society, that is always kept in mind. And to keep on trying, I'll never forget that one of the language coaches that I worked with, he was from Somalia, and I had him come into the classroom to speak with my students. They were fourth graders at the time. And it was about that perseverance, right? And within the perseverance, knowing that with education, no one can ever take that from you. You know, people can steal things from you, or people can, hurt you in other ways, but no one can ever take what's in your mind, what you've learned, your education. So I would like for our English language learners to know that that's something that they can always hold on to.
That's so powerful. So powerful, right? Especially the challenges that, that a lot of students have to overcome. Sometimes even just getting to the United States and having to, navigate learning the language and content and academic success all at the same time. Yeah. So are there any helpful resources that you might suggest that we share with our audience? I know we talked about the website, so we'll definitely share that. And of course, the PRILI information. Is there anything else that we could share?
I think that with each of our Arburns on our websites, that those are resources that can continuously be accessed as well, and that I would encourage people to visit when they have, these questions when it comes to English language learners or dual language programming, and certainly to reach out to the Arburns, whether it's just to be a thought partner or to vent. We all can use an ear sometimes, and we can all use some support sometimes, and that's just another piece of what we're available for. So
Yeah, and I was also thinking about the fact that all of our Arburns, different technical assistance centers throughout the state, they're all different. They're all unique in their own ways. So it's really interesting to go to different websites, the different Arburn sites, and see what their areas of focus are, right? Because I know, in the Central New York region, we have a lot of like spread out districts that are, that are not so big and are unique to the rest of the state. So it's really interesting to see what different Arburns focus on. So check
Agreed.
them all out. Yeah,
I
me
do. Yeah, I do sometimes.
yes, that we yeah, because we
I learn a
definitely
lot.
we definitely like borrow things because maybe it's something that we hadn't thought about. We're like, hey, that's a really good resource. We're gonna can we borrow that? Awesome. All right. Well, Anna, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk with me today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Colette.
Thank you for listening today. If you would like to learn more about the brilliant guest we had on today's episode or any of the resources we discussed, please visit the Mid-State Arburn webpage. This podcast is produced by Mid-State Arburn at OCM BOCES, and our theme music is Catalyst from Purple Planet Music. We hope that you'll tune in next time for more of Our Burning Questions.